Chapter 41, The Good Young King Josiah. Young Josiah was made king of Judah at such an early age that he must have dropped his toys to receive the scepter. This best-beloved of all Judah's king lived a life so wise and beautiful that a band of gold should encircle the story of it to set it off from what precedes and what follows. It was a glad day in Jerusalem when the little 8-year-old boy was brought forward to be crowned. The tragic death of his father, Amon, which had cast such a gloom over the land, was forgotten when the people beheld this promising king. He was evidently attractive, with that high-minded, dignified bearing which promised so well for the future. The little king heard long conversations among the leading men on the many dangers that were threatening the nation. There seemed to be foes on every side. His grandfather, Manasseh, and his father, Amon, had done little to strengthen the kingdom, and watchful neighbor kings were quick to take advantage of any weakness. Josiah was to be trained for great duties, and the good high priest Hilkiah became his teacher. It was no light task to take charge of a king and to see that he was directed and not led. In a very short time he would be master not only of himself but of the nation. We think that Hilkiah was an unusually wise teacher. It was Judah's good fortune to have a few years of quiet while the king was growing up. This was due to the fact that Assyria, which had been filling with terror all that part of the world, was beginning to show signs of weakening. It meant only that some other nation was growing stronger, but that power had not yet become threatening, and Judah had a feeling of relief and safety. It was worth much to feel easy, if only for a few years. Josiah quietly developed until his 16th year. Then he showed clearly the bent of his nature and the result of his training. While he was yet young, he began to seek after the God of David, his father. This seeking after God was quite different from the conversion of his wicked grandfather, Manasseh. He had been driven to piety by suffering and fear, but Josiah turned to God by the simple sincerity of his noble nature. At 20, when he had reached full manhood, according to the Jewish law, his larger activities began. At that time, a stranger nation loomed up, threateningly, above the horizon. It was the Scythians, from their home in the north, who made their way through mountain passes and proceeded to lay waste the country around the Great Sea. They were the fiercest of half-savage nations, and their numbers seemed to have no counting. Egypt was their destination, but wherever they were, they warred and plundered. All countries were overcome with fear, and growing accounts of their number and fierceness spread from land to land. On their way to Egypt, they kept close to the coast, and they came no nearer Judah than to cause fear and trembling. It was under such circumstances that the people would stop to hear warnings, and Josiah took advantage of this time to open his great reforms. It was a work requiring courage. Here was a young king of 20 taking his stand against customs of generations. The people, many of them, had become attached to their idols. Since the days of Hezekiah's reforms, more than half a century had gone by, and most of those who were under Josiah had been born and trained in idolatry. It was no small thing for the king to break up idol worship. He repeated all the reforms of his great-grandfather, Hezekiah, but he went farther still. He removed the high places, which dated back to the days of Samuel, and even farther. Over 3 centuries before, the mission of this young king had been foretold. When Jeroboam, the first king of Israel, stood before his newly erected altar at Bethel to offer sacrifice before the golden calf, a prophet came in and rebuked him. He predicted that a king named Josiah would burn the bones of the idolaters upon the altar. It took a long time for this prophecy to be fulfilled, but the time had come at last. Josiah started out on a personal tour of inspection to see that his reforms were carried out. At Bethel, which once belonged to Israel, he saw the altar of Jeroboam, and behind him were the tombs of those who had worshipped idols. He took the bones and burnt them on the altar, and then destroyed the altar. In this manner he proceeded to the extreme southern point. The king's word was law, but deep-rooted custom cannot be changed by a command, It took him 6 years to make a deep impression on the religion of the people and to turn their hearts to higher things. To renovate the temple was a most sacred work. It was a labor of love to Josiah. Every nook and corner of the temple was ransacked. In a hidden place where it had lain neglected and forgotten, the priest Hilkiah came across the book of the law of God. It was probably a copy of the book known to us as Deuteronomy. How long it had been there, we do not know, but it came forth as if it had been a fresh revelation from God. Hilkiah handed it to the scribe Shaphan, and he, in turn, came to the king, saying, "Hilkiah the priest hath delivered me a book." King Josiah naturally wanted to know the contents of the book. From the opening sentence, he was all attention. His face showed both surprise and awe. As the reading continued and Josiah heard more of the law, which his nation had so thoroughly disregarded, he rent his clothes to express his grief. When he had heard the book, he at once appointed a committee to investigate the matter and learn what the fate of the nation would be because of disobedience. They went to the prophetess Huldah, and that godly woman was filled with the spirit of prophecy. She told them of evil which would overwhelm Judah because of the wickedness and weakness of many generations. One good reign could not save the nation. There could be no other fate for a people who would run after all the gods of heathen nations and absorb their sins. But young Josiah, she said, would be spared. He was tender-hearted and penitent for the sins of his nation. The evil would be postponed for his sake, and he was not to see the suffering of his people. The king was thoroughly aroused. Without delay, he called together his priests and Levites and all the people, both great and small, to hear the law read. He wanted to bind the people by a pledge. In this he took the lead. He stood in his place and made a covenant before Jehovah. He pledged himself to keep his commandments and his testimonies and his statutes with all his heart and with all his soul. He asked all the people of Judah and of Benjamin to rise with one accord and give the same promise. It was not difficult to persuade his nation, for the people loved their king and had confidence in him. Whatever he did, they were very willing to do. The covenant to God became general. The time was ripe for a great Passover, and everything was ready. The king was the leading spirit. He set the priests in their offices and encouraged them in every way. He instructed the Levites, who had carried the ark about in their teachings, to set it in the temple that it should no more be a burden to their shoulders. It is supposed that this custom of carrying the ark about arose during some reign like Ahaz's or Manasseh's, when everything in the temple was in danger of being profaned by idolatry. The king led in offerings as well. He gave 30,000 lambs and kids for sacrifices and 3,000 bullocks. The princes followed his example and gave freewill offerings. The chief priest and his associates vied with the others in their generosity, and lastly the Levites came forward with their numerous Passover offerings. Everything proceeded with order and law. This Passover, which lasted the usual 7 days, surpassed anything of a kind since the days of Samuel in the number of offerings by king, princes, priests, and Levites. Perhaps it had not the enthusiasm of Hezekiah's Passover, which was continued through 2 weeks, but it was made to conform more closely to the law. Josiah was a religious reformer, not a warrior. We are not told that he looked so much to fortifications and strongholds to shut out foes as he did to get the nation into the right path and to direct it in justice and morality. After many years, during which we are not given any detail of his work, Egypt came again to the front and aspired to be the chief world power. To accomplish this, King Necho II, with an immense army, was moving north to attack Assyria. For some reason, Josiah disputed this king's right to pass through territory under his control and went out to stop him. It was such a mistake, as the wisest sometimes make. Necho tried to avoid a conflict with Josiah. He sent ambassadors to him with the message, "What have I to do with thee, thou king of Judah? I come not against thee today, but against the house wherewith I have war. This should have made Josiah hesitate, but he was determined to turn the great host aside out of his territory. Perhaps he feared that on Egypt's return from Assyria, Judah too would be taken. The forces met on the battle plain of Esdraelon. Memorable battles had been fought here, but this one was the most tragic in its results. Josiah, in his war chariot, drove from rank to rank to set his men in the best array, but he did not have a chance to show his skill as a general. At the very outset, like Ahab of Israel, he was struck by the chance arrow of an Egyptian archer and was mortally wounded. It was a dark moment to Josiah. In his death, he saw the defeat of his army and probably the end of his beloved nation. He turned to his men with a last request. "Bear me away to my traveling chariot, for I am sore wounded." When the retreating army reached Megiddo, the king died, and with him died also the last bright hope of Judah. The return to Jerusalem was the saddest march the army of Judah had ever known in any age. It is safe to say that no other king had ever been so generally loved and trusted. Jerusalem had never before had such a mourning. In eastern countries in that day, the people gave full expression to their feelings. There was no effort made to hide a broken heart, and when the body was brought in, followed by the wailing army, the whole city joined in the mourning. The Bible says, "The land mourned, every family apart. All Judah joined Jerusalem in loud lamentations. And all the singing men and the singing women spake of Josiah in their lamentations unto this day." It was a deeper sorrow than mere grief for the loss of a beloved king. It meant the death knell of the fondest hopes of a nation. Without this ruling spirit touching them to trust in providence, what could they do with dangers closing in around them? Josiah had accomplished his mission. The result of sin and disobedience was hastening to the nation, but the king had been promised that he should not see the sufferings of his people. He remained to them a national hero, whose high services to his people became embodied in song and story. But the nation was left sorely bereaved.